tuning in to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC 105.3 FM. I'm Dave Pablo.
And I'm J.P. Pogorski.
Today, WOOC correspondent H. Bosch Jr. meets with a local consultant about how to improve your credit.
And we have several guests today, including labor activist Willie Terry.
As well as Lauren Bailey, mobility manager with the Capital District Transportation Authority.
And later on, we'll have our youth segment with Ariana, Lauren, and Aaron. Let's start the show off with some of today's local headlines.
Governor Cuomo is coming under fire for belittling Karen DeWitt, a female public radio reporter, for asking him about the state's plans to address sexual harassment. Cuomo lectured DeWitt that sexual harassment was a societal problem, not just a government one, and said she was doing a disservice to women by only asking what the government was doing. Cuomo later called DeWitt to apologize for his statements. Cuomo was previously criticized for his hiring of former state assembly member Sam Hoyt, who was forced to resign over sexual harassment accusations.
The Troy Record reports that the Rensselaer County Legislature unanimously passed a new county law on Tuesday night to limit the discharge of a likely carcinogen known as 1,4-dioxin, particularly for areas in the town of Nassau. The legislature blamed what it called the continued failure of both the state and federal governments to take action to limit the discharge of the contaminant. Tests revealed the chemical is in the groundwater at the Dewey Lofel Landfill Superfund site in Nassau. The EPA opposed the law since it was not limited to sources of drinking water.
Governor Andrew Cuomo on Wednesday said he would push for new laws allowing confiscation of guns from people convicted of domestic violence, including misdemeanors. State law currently prohibits weapons possession by those convicted of felonies, but that doesn't include domestic violence crimes which are misdemeanors, such as assault and battery or strangulation.
The FCC repealed its net neutrality rules today. The rule will allow the internet providers to favor some customers over others in terms of speed and access. The decision repeals Obama-era regulations for broadband companies such as AT&T and Verizon. The advocacy group Free Press will challenge the repeal in the courts. The FCC's main argument for revoking the 2015 rules is that the regulations hurt investment in broadband infrastructure. However, studies have shown many broadband providers actually increase their investments.
Researchers have found that pregnant women living within two-thirds of a mile of a hydraulic fracturing well were 25% more likely to give birth to a low-weight infant than were women who lived at least 10 miles outside that zone during pregnancy. Low birth weights raise the likelihood that the children will suffer poorer health and lower achievement, including reduced earnings and educational attainment.
Climate change made the torrential rains that flooded Houston after Hurricane Harvey last summer much worse, scientists reported Wednesday. Two research groups found that the record rainfall over Texas in late August, which totaled more than 50 inches in some areas, was as much as 38% higher than would be expected in a world that was not warming. The Army Corps of Engineers also announced that Puerto Rico's electrical grid is unlikely to be fully restored until the end of May, months longer than the timeline offered by the island's governor.
Bloomberg reported that GOP negotiators reached a compromise Wednesday in the tax cut bill. The bill will allow drilling for oil in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. However, it will also contain tax credits for electric vehicles and wind production.
Union workers at AT&T gained important securities on Wednesday. Communications Workers of America, the union which represents 20,000 workers at AT&T and hundreds of thousands of other companies, negotiated a deal which includes a 10% pay increase and a job security provision. AT&T workers have been working without a contract since February and went on strike for 3 days in May. The deal will need to be ratified by a union vote on January 12th.
For those of you just tuning in, you're listening to WOOC's Hudson Mohawk Magazine on 105.3 FM.
To learn more about this program and how to support the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
With us in the studio right now is Willie Terry, a retired New York State Public Service worker and trustee of the Troy Area Labor Council. Willie is a longtime labor, student, and community activist involved with many organizations, including here at the Sanctuary for Independent Media and WOOC. Willie is here now to share with us how he's bringing the labor activism he's always done to WOOC. Thanks for joining us, Willie.
You're welcome. How are you doing?
I'm good. So let's just lead in with this. So you're involved with many groups, including multiple unions, NAACP, Underground Railroad History Project, and National Museum of African American History and Culture. And you've been an activist for more than 30 years. What first got you into organizing?
Well, let me just tell you something about myself, you know. And now, let's start by saying that my name is Willie Terry, and I was born in Georgia. And I was born during the time of segregation, you know, the racist South, we used to call it. But let me back up and say that I studied history a lot while I was in school. And by studying African-American history, I learned a lot of information in terms of what was going on in the world. And plus the professors and things that I had at the school who I was involved with. But I just want to say Willie Terry is a name, I call it a slave name, because Malcolm X said that one of his speeches that the slave master during the system of slavery in America gave our forefathers his last name to denote we were his property and his worker. Now, yes, I've been an activist and an advocate and an organizer in college and the community and the labor movement most of my life. Now, I don't like to talk much about me because I feel that the individual is subordinate to the struggle itself. And I feel all of us out here who are doing the best that we can do at this point in time that we live in reference to whatever's going on. And whatever I could do has been simply on the basis of that being the necessary thing for me to do at this time and this point in history. And the only thing that any of us want who see ourselves as progressive activists is the freedom of our people from wage slavery. Now, the freedom fighters in Mozambique, that was a group in Mozambique in Africa, you know, I studied, who was fighting against fighting to free themselves from Portuguese colonialism, they adopted a slogan called a luta continua, which we adopted as part of our freedom struggle in America during my time in organizing in 1970, which means the struggle continues. So that's a little bit about.
Okay, that's interesting. So I want to go off track for 2 seconds because see your name Willie Terry, was that the name that you had when you were born, essentially?
Yeah, most of the blacks who came here to America, they was given slave master name. And those are the names that we use because our language was taken away from us, our culture, and so we don't know what would be our real name.
Yeah. I guess I'm asking because there are these two blues musicians, Willie Terry and Brownie McGee, from maybe the 50s, maybe. I have some recordings of their stuff. So I just didn't know if there was like a familial relation or anything like that.
Oh, no. I'm from Georgia, and there was a slave master named Terry in Georgia.
So why don't we talk about some of the things that you're working on, though, the different organizations that you have, you know, the CSEA.
CSEA is the Civil Service Employees Association. I'm a retired member, and I'm a member of the retiree part of the Civil Service Employees Association. And, you know, it's still an active group that do things like lobbying and, mailing to try to get politicians to do certain things.
Mm-hmm. And it says here that you're also involved with the ACLU and the AFSCME. I'm not familiar with the CBTU.
CBTU is the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. And that is a group that started in 1972 during the time Richard Nixon was president. You know, because during that time, you know, they wanted us to vote, and we didn't want to vote for Richard Nixon. You know, so we started, they started a group called the Coalition of Black Trade Union, which was started, I'm trying to say, I think it was in Chicago. But we're going to have a speaker on about that group. We'll be coming here in January.
Great.
To talk about more about that.
And I think most of our listeners probably know what the ACLU is, but AFSCME is the American Affiliation of State, Municipal, and County Workers.
Yeah. You're a member of
County, State, Municipal.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So maybe tell us a little bit, because it sounds like you've been involved with some of these organizations for a long time. How they've evolved in the time that you've been with them, maybe key issues that you've worked on, whether it's, you know, wage issues or other things like that.
Well, I've been involved with these groups a while, especially the Coalition of Black Trade Unions. They have conventions. And I've been in CSCA for quite a while. I was a local union president in New York City for about 10 years. And one of the major issues that we worked on, that I worked on with them, were the anti-apartheid movement. And I was on the official committee for Nelson Mandela when he came here. And we brought him to Yankee Stadium, City College, you know, in different places.
Yep.
When I was in New York City. And I did a lot of work in the union as an, you know, I was a worker.
Right.
But I did a lot of work in terms of organizing the people at the work site and trying to make them aware of what's going on.
And how did you get involved with WOOC?
Well, I got involved with WOOC by attending some of the workshops and seminars that they had when they was trying to establish a radio station. And I had a discussion with the program coordinator, Steve, and, that's how I got involved with them.
All right, so you're involved with something called Labor Talk. What is Labor Talk?
Okay. Labor Talk is something that, you know, this program coordinator and I talked about during those times I was going to those seminars. The Labor Talk is a segment of the radio station here that we are planning to give labor activists and unions a public outlet on their activities, programs, and viewpoint. And I just want to say that a lot of people don't understand, may not understand what we're saying, labor, but it's working people, working class people. And working class people are not just people who are in unions or working class people could be people that are not employed, unemployed, housewives, children of employed people, laid off people, people that work part time or seasons. Those are working class people. And those are the people that produce the wealth in the society. And we're not talking about the corporation and the big bosses who own the means of production in society. So that is the purpose that we are setting up the radio station to give labor an outlet.
And why do you feel it's important to have a voice on radio?
Well, it's important to have a voice on the radio because, well, let me just start here. It is not only important to have a voice on the radio. It's important to have a part on the radio, television, the internet, for labor to have films, media, newspaper. Radio is still part of the mass media with mass listeners and followers. But independent media, to me, is the best source to tell labor stories, issues, activities, programs, and politics. Because without the political influence from, corporations or the bosses or whatever. So, and labor have to tell their own story, you know. And telling their own story, that is what the public should know, what labor is about.
So you basically want to be able to deliver it firsthand instead of having it screened by somebody who might have a different agenda than yours.
Yeah, yes, because all the corporate media are profit-making ventures.
Mm-hmm.
And labor is not one of their favorite. Not one of their favorites.
Right. Yeah, by any stretch. Hey, so why is it important for labor to have a voice on the radio at this point? Or actually, sorry, we just covered that one. What do you think about the current state of labor in this country?
Well, I think the current situation is not so good, labor, you know. And that have to do with several things. One, the right-wing conservative movement, who is doing everything they can to disrupt and destroy the labor movement, creating right-to-work states, using whatever legislative or legal action they can to reduce the political power of labor. Two, the labor groups have splits. There are a lot of splits in the labor movement because labor really would have to come together. Three, racism. That's a problem. Labor movement would have to deal with the question of racism inside labor groups. And fourth, corporations. Corporations are co-opting unions and developing their own unions, their own groups. And these groups are not really union, but they giving them certain benefits to keep them from really, organizing true unions.
And what do you see as the future development of labor talk?
Some of the, you mean the challenges or the priorities?
Whatever.
Oh, okay. Well, some of the challenges of labor is that the movement is getting labor in general to buy into the labor movement. Because a lot of times labor groups are kind of, skeptical of the media. And the other thing is to get them to support this radio station with information, interviews, volunteers, and also provide resources, and that include financial support, and to get them to listen to it. Now, some of the things that we want to do, that priorities are that make this happen, is that we have to make sure that the segments are constant every week and there's information that people really want to hear. And the other thing we do have to do is to integrate the labor program with the community. There have to be an integration of this program with the community. And also we have to develop a labor talk committee. You have to be a group of us, not just one person to kind of coordinate it, but a group, and we have to be working on it to make it, develop.
Okay. And how will Labor Talk benefit the Capital Region? I mean, you've already kind of covered that a little bit, but are there other things to add to it?
Well, I want to say that, by having the program, we would be educating the Troy community about the history of labor, and there's a lot of labor history that happened in Troy. We'll be educating people on what the union do and why the union matter, and what the union should do to be involved in the community, and also workers will learn how to fight for their rights. We can have segments about, worker rights, and workers will learn that and how to fight against their employer. The sky's the limit, of what we could do to get the community involved.
Great. So we're almost at the end. I think we have like a half minute left. Are there other things that you wanted to add or maybe we should just be looking forward to Labor Talk.
Yeah, I think we should be just looking forward to Labor Talk because there's still a lot of things that we have to talk about, and there's a lot of ideas that we have. In the coming, segments, we will be probably putting some of that information out.
Great. Well, thank you. So that was Willie Terry, longtime labor activist and now WOC news producer, bringing his labor activism to the airways. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you, Willie. For our next segment, as part of our series on local entrepreneurs, WOOC correspondent H. Bosch Jr. interviews Sean Moody of Moody Blues Consulting. Mr. Moody focuses on helping people repair, improve, and maximize their credit to achieve their financial goals, including home ownership or starting their own businesses.
Today's special guest is Sean Moody of Moody Blues Consulting. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bosch. Thanks for having me.
Hey, we appreciate you taking time out your busy schedule to stop by. So let's just dig right in. And like I always say, let's make it do what it do until it do what it do.
I like it. Yeah, absolutely.
about you, okay? What influenced you to start your business?
Yeah, well, so former bank executive, I worked for a major bank for about 9 years. And back in 2013, I was a casualty of the bank downsizing. But, you know, for a long time, I've been very, very passionate about financial literacy. And obviously, I had a lot of, access and exposure to working with clients that had credit issues. And so I saw an opportunity to really not only serve, you know, the community, but also the industry I came from, banking, because the reality is there's a lot of miscommunication and a lot of misconceptions around how credit works. And
absolutely,
there's a lack of awareness overall around the availability of, you know, legitimate resources to help people that may have gone through some sort of life event where their credit takes a hit. There's no, you know, awareness out there that there's resources out there to help these people. So
let me ask you this thing. Why would I want this service and how would it benefit me?
So first of all, the service, you know, we consider ourselves, you know, consumer advocates. So our goal is to help people, whether it's repair their credit, improve their credit, establish, or even maximize, right? Because the reality is in this country, regardless of whether you agree with it or not, credit plays an important role in this country. And if you've got great credit, typically you have, you know, access to more opportunities, and you can, you know, basically live the life that you want to live on your terms. If you have bad credit or poor credit, severely limited opportunities. And it can be very, very difficult to navigate and do certain things, whether it's as simple as opening a, you know, getting a cell phone or even getting car insurance.
Or an apartment
or you buying, know, a house.
Yeah, everything.
Buying a car.
You know, right before the interview, I stated something to you, and you kind of liked the little phrase I coined. And I said, you don't need to have a lot of money to get good credit, but you have to have good credit to get a lot of money.
I'm going to actually take that. I like that. I would definitely
agree. Steve gave me that phrase. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And people don't realize that. People think, oh, I don't have a lot of money. No. That's the wrong conception. You don't have to have a lot of money to get good credit. All right. But if you want to have access to a lot of money to change your life, you have to have good credit. So leads me into this. Sean, my score is 520. All right. I'm in this, out on this island, and I want to get a house. Mm-hmm. That would be my life dream, you know, to get a home, you know, and just really, you know, fulfill what they call the American dream. So I'm at 520. And I know the banks are telling me you need to be at 680, 700 before we'll even look at you. All right. How do I get from 520 to 680? What type of instructions would I have to follow to get there, and how long would it take me? Because I know there's a lot of listeners are going to want to hear this, you know?
Yeah, so
especially the nurse and the aide person who works at the hospital, all right, who doesn't make a lot of money, but wants that American dream.
Mm-hmm. So what I would tell you is there's no real shortcut. You know, even though I'm in the business of helping people, you know, repair their credit. So if someone's at a 520, I think the first step is knowing exactly where you are and why you are where you are. So, as an example, there's a lot of resources out there right now. For example, Credit Karma, Experian.com, you can get a free credit report. So first and foremost, you have to know what is driving that score. And there's basically five factors that go into a FICO score.
Speak. I'm listening.
All right. So the biggest factor is your payment history. So if you have an account that's open, there's only three types of account that report to a credit bureau. That's either going to be a mortgage, it's going to be a credit card, or it's going to be an installment loan, which could be like a student loan.
Which ruins so many people. I know they've been ruined.
Trillions of dollars.
Because of, yeah,
student loans. 1.3 trillion, I think, or 1.4.
Mm-hmm.
And or even an auto loan. So those are the only three types of credit that will report to the bureaus. Okay, so unfortunately, a debit card is not going to help your credit score. You know, okay, it can help you budget, but it's not going to, you know, a debit card is not going to report to the credit bureaus, meaning it's not going, so simply using your debit card is not going to help your credit score. So
what's my next step then to get them to start looking at me seriously at 520?
Well, you have to, you know, credit's one of those things, whether you agree with it or not, you have to use it to really get the benefits of it. Now, certainly you have to use it responsibly, right? Mm-hmm. So couple of simple facts.
Meaning, and Sakisha, don't go buy the $250 boots to go out for New Year's Eve.
Sakisha should not do that.
Okay,
no, not a good idea.
All right, go ahead.
And I know we're in the holiday season, so I think this is a, you know, a timely discussion.
Okay.
So one, if you have, let's say you have a credit card, this person with a 520. Two things. One, you want to make sure you pay on time all the time. Okay, that's a very, very simple tip. So your payment history actually drives 35% of your FICO score. So the wow. biggest factor. Second of all, you want to keep your balances low. And while most banks tell you you should not have a balance of more than 30% of your credit limit. So let's say you have a credit card with a $1,000 credit limit. That means that you don't want to have more than $300 at any given time as an outstanding balance. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you that the sweet spot is actually 10%. So for every $1,000 worth of available credit you have on your credit card,
wow.
yep, you don't want to have more than $100 as a balance. So for everyone that's, you know, doing their Christmas shopping or holiday shopping, not a good idea to max out your credit cards. You want to keep in mind that you want to keep your balances low. So you don't want to create balances on your credit card. You don't want to put balances on your credit card that, let's say, you can't pay today in cash. So if you're going to spend $1,000 on your credit card, you better have $1,000 of cash saved
gotcha.
Up.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. See, because I'm looking at where my credit score is, and I'll be honest. My score is so low. When I went to the bank, it was so low. The banker actually got wind chill. You know, he got cold. It was so low. It was like 32 degrees. He was like, do you feel the draft in here? Mm-hmm. He says, no. Actually, it's your credit score, Mr. Bosch. It's so low. I'm getting the cold.
We got to heat him up. We got to heat him up. Yeah. Score, right?
That's right. I'm going to come back. I'm going to heat up. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be in the 6-7s when I do come back. But anyway, along with individuals, do you help out businesses?
I do.
You know,
I do.
Because that's very important. If your business has good credit, it brings you to the next level, you know.
It does, and you know, especially for, you know, newer entrepreneurs or anyone in business for less than 2 years, it's very important to establish credit, but it all starts with your personal credit. You know, the only way you can eventually establish business credit, assuming that you have a business, obviously, is to have good personal credit. That'll give you a good head start. So that's where it starts.
So you personally, starting your own business, because I know so many of us have these dreams about being our own boss, you know, starting a business, being an entrepreneur. What type of financial challenges did you face getting financing, getting started, you know, hitting the ground running, you know?
Yeah, I appreciate that question. So when I first started, after you know, I left the bank, I knew that I wanted to start my own business, and you know, I did have some money saved, but I ended up taking $20,000 out of my retirement, and I invested it in this franchise, a credit repair franchise called Prime National, and because I wanted to have a company where I could assist people with credit concerns, and so. For me, luckily, I was able to save in my retirement fund, and I had that, and I invested that. And then as I started to get my name out there and really work the business, working with different banks, because being that I was a former banker, I did have the relationships. And that gave me the opportunity to work with many of their customers who are looking to purchase a home primarily where the credit got in the way, right? So the credit wasn't the 500s or the low 600s, and so as I was building the business, the money that I made in the business, I would have to reinvest back into the business.
Gotcha.
So
well, let me move on, but I want to say this to our listeners: this segment and this brother is so deep, we got to get him back because there's so much knowledge that I just can't cover it all in one show. My next question is, let's talk about those data breaches and how that affected so many people. You know, people don't realize, you know, the harm that did to people's credit, you know, those companies.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, the data breaches, that's not something that's going to go away. It's really the new norm, unfortunately. So I'm sure you heard of the Equifax data breach where over 150 million people, you know, you're talking about social security numbers, date of birth, addresses. You know, this is personal information that could be used, to hurt consumers like you and me, you know, by people that have bad intentions. Also, most recently, Uber was found to have had a data breach of over 51 million people over a year ago. And unfortunately, they tried to conceal it.
And it's like these guys are masters of deceit. Mm-hmm. They don't tell you anything until they get caught with their hand in the cookie jar.
That's right.
Then all of a sudden, oh, wow, geez, I'm sorry. You know, we made a mistake, you know. So with that, then, give me some general tips around the holidays, because seems like I know myself and other people probably can attest to this. I'm getting bombarded with credit criminals. That's another story, guys. Delete that criminal charge. That's me in another life. You don't need to know about that.
I can't help you with that,
Ross. Right, all right. Yeah. I'm getting bombarded with credit cards. That's what I'm trying to say.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Please speak to that. All right.
Absolutely. Uh-huh. So definitely we're in the holiday season. But before I touch on that, Bosch, you did mention the data breaches. What I would tell everyone is, first of all, know where you are. So you want to be very vigilant to monitor your credit, monitor your accounts, because being that these data breaches happened, and they will continue to happen, by the way, you want to make sure, and by the way, people that have bad intentions can hold on to this information for years, right? And so you want to make sure you know where you are. So monitor your credit, whether it's you're going to go to Credit Karma or a lot of the banks, depending on your banking relationship, they give you access to your credit file or at least your credit score. You definitely want to monitor it and take steps to be very vigilant that way. To your question about the holidays, so yes, so you're getting a lot of credit card offers. What I would tell people and your listeners is you only apply for credit when you need it. That's a general rule of thumb. Okay, so when you go into these department stores now in the holiday season, whether it's Macy's or Target, they're trying to get you to open new credit cards. Would you like to save 10% or 50%, whatever it is?
Uh-huh.
Not a good idea to just do that, to save that 10% or 15%, because even though it may seem, you know, in the short term, you can save some money. Long term, if you apply for too much credit in a short period of time, it's going to hurt your credit score.
Okay, great.
All right,
great.
So you don't want to.
Gotta ask you this question, unless the wife will get upset. Family, tell me a little bit about that.
So live right here in the 518 in Albany, and I have a beautiful wife, Connie, and I've got...
shout out to Connie.
Thank you. Hello, Connie, and I've got two daughters and a young son who just turned two in July.
Mm-hmm.
Keeps me up at night, keeps me young.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so that's my family. We live right here in Albany, and we've been here now since 06.
Real quick, how many employees, or do you have any additional employees?
I've got two associates that work with me right now.
Two associates. Yep. Full-time or part-time?
Part-time.
Business, is it local, regional, or, you know?
So my office is located in Colony. Mm-hmm. However, we service the entire country.
Great. Where do you see yourself at in 3 years?
You just hit me with all these questions. Mm-hmm. In 3 years, I have a plan.
We're bad around here, man. You got to be on your P's and Q's. Bring your A game.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So we have a very aggressive plan to scale the business. Because, again, I want to make sure that we expand our reach outside of just the 518, the entire country. But we're looking for
great
5 million in revenue in the next 3 years.
How do people get a hold to Sean Moody of Moody Blues Consultant?
They can call 518-245-9411, and they can also go to moodybluesconsulting.com. So it's MoodieBlueze as in zebra, consulting.com, and you can reach us there as well.
There you go, folks. You got it. Listen to this man. Follow his instructions, and he will change your life financially. All right? And I'll end by saying, don't hear about being a difference. Be about being a difference. That's it.
For those just tuning in, I'm J.P. Pogorski.
And I'm Dave Pueblo. You're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC 105.3 FM in Troy.
To learn more about the Hudson Mohawk Magazine program, to listen online, and to learn how to support the Sanctuary for Independent Media, check us out online at mediasanctuary.org.
For our next segment, you've probably seen the lines of green bikes parked in public spaces in Troy, Albany, Saratoga, and Schenectady this past year. These green bikes are the Capital Region's Bike Share Program, and we have Lauren Bailey, the CDTA's mobility manager, here to tell us about it. Thanks for joining us, Lauren.
Thanks, Lauren.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So, first killer question, did you bike here?
I did not, unfortunately. My rule is no long-distance biking. I live in Albany, so it would have been a little bit of a trip for me to get here for the weather, personally.
All right, so work on that for the future.
I definitely.
Okay. So, for folks who might be in the dark about what we're even talking about with the bike share program, why don't you tell us the gist of what it's about and how it works.
Absolutely. So bike sharing is a concept of a shared service concept that you have short-term bike rentals that are one-way options for travel. So essentially, you're able to pick up a bike at one rack, ride it to another rack, and drop it off. It's self-service. You don't need to speak to anybody or anything like that. You can do it from your phone, your website, or actually right from the bike itself in our system.
And tell us a little bit more about the program itself, like who's behind the infrastructure, who takes care of the bikes, who facilitates all that.
For sure. So our program locally is CDPHP Cycle. We are managed by the Capital District Transportation Authority, which is who I work for. And our vendor is a company called Social Bicycles out of Brooklyn. So they do all our operations. They do the maintenance on the bicycles, rebalancing, which is where they bring the bikes from where they've ended up back to the racks where they started so people can pick them up the next day, that sort of thing.
And how long has this program been in the Capital District?
We launched July 27th, and we wrapped up on November 30th.
Okay, so it's very seasonal, and the bikes go into hibernation for the winter months or not?
They do. We are currently operating under a model where we are open for what some people consider an extended riding season into November, but then the bicycles are wintering at the Albany Public Library. I have to shout them out. They're a great partner of ours.
And you said that the mechanics that you work with, that they're down in Brooklyn. Do the bikes get shipped down there? And is this part of like a larger state kind of bike share program so that multiple things go down there?
Sure. The company is out of Brooklyn, but we do have local staff here from Social Bicycles that are local members of the community that operate the program.
Okay. And I understand that you've worked closely with the program in Buffalo to develop this local version. Could you talk about that relationship and how it's, you know, been important to you?
Absolutely. So Buffalo Bike Share Ready Bike was kind of the first large bike sharing program and also the first through Social Bicycles in upstate New York. They work with an umbrella organization called Shared Mobility that does a lot of great background research, citing discussions about where the racks are going to go, as well as general support for shared mobility projects in upstate New York. So we worked very closely with Shared Mobility as well as the staff of Ready Bike to get our program up and running and lean on their wisdom.
Mm-hmm. It's a different sort of atmosphere, too, because, I mean, Buffalo is a bigger city, but you're spread out over four municipalities, right? And is that like a trickier dance in its own way because you're dealing with multiple governments?
Absolutely. We're running four mini bike shares, essentially. So what that looks like is each municipality has different goals for their bike share as well as different uses. Some cities are more geared towards commuting. Others are geared more towards leisure. Saratoga Springs, for example, saw a very large influx of tourists that were using these instead of using their cars to get around the downtown area of Saratoga Springs. So between working with the different governments, I mean, different, they all have their own goals as well as their own ways of doing things. So once we were able to get everyone on board, it was really a breeze getting everything out and up and running.
And what have you learned so far from your managing four different systems here?
I think the biggest thing that we learned is that biking in the Capital Region, I don't have to tell you guys, it's possible. And it's possible not just for people who consider themselves cyclists. We've learned the paths that people want to take to different things that may not be the roads that we thought they were going to ride on. We've learned times of day and days of the week where people are going to ride more and start to learn the behavior of the people in the cities as well as outside of the cities. We have a lot of people that are members of our program that live in the suburbs who have memberships and will come in, park, and use the system either for leisure or for getting around town for errands and that sort of thing.
So do you have an idea about the demographics? Because with Saratoga, I can see it's a very touristy kind of place. But in Troy, I've wondered, you know, who are the clientele for that?
For sure. In Troy, because it was a smaller system, we're not really relying on the data for this year as much. We'll see a better idea once the system grows in the future. We did have a number of students that registered as members, as well as many people living in Lansingburg and South Troy were registering for the program. So we did see a broad swath across the area. One thing that was very encouraging as well is that a lot of people see bike share. It's trendy. It's new. It's for young people. We saw a large group of people over the age of 65 riding regularly with our program for their exercise, leisure, that sort of thing. So, you know, the Mohawk Hudson Bike Hike Trail got a lot of use, mostly by retirees using it during the day, which was really great.
That makes so much sense when you think about it, because, you know, an older person, unless they have a background in bike mechanics, they don't want to really deal with the maintenance issue of it. If it breaks down, they don't want to have to go through all that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. What kind of changes might you see in the system next year?
Well, we have a lot of really great things coming down the pipeline. The two biggest things are that we're expanding the system. We're going from 160 bicycles to 320 next year. And that means more stations in residential areas outside of the downtowns of the cities, the way we had it set up this year. And the other thing is that we heard everyone's need loud and clear for signage at every location. So there will be a sign at every rack. If you've come upon one of our racks without a sign, you might not be super familiar in what to do. And we want to make it as easy as possible for people to get on a bike.
And what's the typical thing? I mean, like, do people just kind of stroll up with a credit card and they put it in the system and they go from there?
Sure. So to register for the system, you need to either go on our website or download our app. You will then enter your payment information into that. And with that, then you're able to get your account number and your PIN, which means that once you have your account, you can walk up to any bike, tap in your account number and tap in your PIN into the back of the bike, and you're off. You're done. The bike unlocks and you can go on your merry way.
What I found interesting was a little while ago, you said that the people were riding places where you didn't think they were going to be riding. What's just by observation, you see them riding on a street that you thought they'd never go down or something?
Most of it was that we saw a lot of people, it actually kind of goes both ways. Part of it was that we had a lot of bold riders riding on busy roadways. People were riding on Hoosick Street. People were riding on Central Avenue in Albany. Roadways that most cyclists avoid like the plague. The other side of that was that people were riding to places that we weren't expecting. The best example I can give is that we had a group of interns that worked at St. Peter's Hospital who were riding because there wasn't great bus service at 4 a.m. when they needed to get there, and other forms of transportation were too expensive. So they were able to use a bike share bike, ride up to St. Peter's, lock it to, and there wasn't a rack up there this year, but they were able to lock it to any signpost, use the system exactly as we had intended, and go to work. And then once they got out, they were able to take a bus back, or if their bike hadn't been taken by somebody else who had come out and rented it, they were able to ride that back down. So we saw new needs and new interest that hadn't really been in the thought process this first time around that we can include next time.
And is that information that you're pulling from in terms of placing the next wave of cycles, if you're doubling your output, and are there surveys, or is it just kind of word of mouth, or how is this working?
Absolutely. So we're starting our process by speaking to the experts. Parks and Trails New York is a huge resource for us, as well as the local bike organizations, including Transport Troy, Albany Bicycling Coalition, these kinds of groups. We start with them. We hear what's working for them and what they want to see. And then the next phase, and stay tuned, this will be coming online soon, is a suggest a site feature on our website, cdphpcycle.com. So you'll be able to go on there and vote for your locations that you want to see.
Mm-hmm. All right. So going back to our questions here, what are some of the busiest times for bike share?
Every Saturday. Rain or shine. Every Saturday we saw a huge bump in ridership as well as membership. So you could really almost watch the thought process of people waking up, registering around 11, going out between 12 and 3, and going for a ride that afternoon, whether they were using it for a one-way trip or a trip on one of our bike trails around the area. That was kind of this consistent thing no matter what, which was really interesting. The other thing was we had a lot of people who clearly had woken up Monday morning and said, I'm going to be healthy and bike to work. They biked on Monday. They did not bike the rest of the week.
Interesting. Interesting. I'm also wondering if there are like destinations where your bikes end up much more often than others.
Bottom of hills. Every time.
So not something like the bus station or something.
No, as of right now, we were mostly seeing people that were kind of taking our destination racks, dropping them, and heading out. So Monument Square, it was our biggest rack in Troy. Lots of bikes left at Monument Square. Albany, bottom of the hill. No one was biking back up State Street. We saw the same thing in Schenectady as well. So it was interesting. But as of right now, we're definitely looking to the future to make it more multimodal so people are able to get their bikes to the bus station and get going.
Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking about, I went to a bike conference maybe in August or September. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yep. Was it the New York Bicycling Coalition
That's
Summit?
That's the one. Were you at that?
I was. Okay. Yeah.
I'm just thinking about all the different seminars that they had there, and there was a CDTA spokesman who was there actually talking about the expansion of the bike racks and all that kind of stuff. You're probably working very closely with that department.
Yeah, actually, the person who was speaking there is my supervisor.
Okay.
So he was there speaking about CDTA's emphasis and focus on bike racks on buses. Mm-hmm. I was also there speaking about bike share with representatives from City Bike as well as the new bike share that's out in Rome, New York. So we're trying to make more of a holistic bike effort at CDTA, not just bike share, but also making sure that we're integrating existing cyclists into our bus system the best we can.
Mm-hmm.
And our listeners most likely want to learn more about the use of the bikes. How can they give you feedback? How can they get more info?
Absolutely. Any inquiries, they're welcome to either email us at cdphpcycle@socialbicycles.com is our customer service email, or they can send a comment through our website, which is cdphpcycle.com. There's a little comment box at the bottom. They can give us direct feedback if they want to expand a bit on why they're interested in a rack in a certain place, general feedback on the system, or any questions they have.
Okay. And our last question. So when we were digging for information about the bike share program, I saw that you were listed on the 40 people under 40 to watch. So your face is turning a little bit pink right now, but how did you get on that list and what's that been like?
I mean, it's been a huge compliment. Being on the 40 under 40 list was always a dream of mine. I feel it was a huge honor. I was on it with a lot of people that I've worked with for many years.
Did you all vote for each other or something?
I mean, I actually don't entirely know who nominated me. I know a couple people, but they told me I got a bunch of nominations, which is just really flattering. So it puts the pressure on a little bit for what the future holds.
Well, congratulations and thanks for coming.
Thank you very much.
So that was Lauren Bailey, mobility manager with the CDTA, answering our questions about the Capital Region's bike share program. Thanks again, Lauren.
Hi, everyone. We're back in the studio with our youth WOOC correspondents, Aaron Pinder and Ariana Young. And they're going to be talking about this time of year. So welcome back to the studio.
Thank you. Happy to be back.
How are you?
Staying blessed.
Good.
Living healthy, all that good stuff.
So what are the sacrifices that the adults in your family are facing as they're getting ready for the holidays?
I would say, like, my parents, you know, putting in extra hours in work, coming in early, going back out, you know, late, just to provide for me and my three siblings. How are you, Aaron?
Well, like Armin said, that my mom has worked, like, two jobs and, like, extra hours and stuff to make us have, like, a good Christmas and stuff, yeah.
So, in your mind, what are some of the ways that the concept of holiday spirit, you know, we have people this time of year who are giving more to charities, to toy drives, to clothing drives, to food drives. So in your mind, what are some of the ways that the whole idea of holiday spirit could be extended throughout the year?
That this could be a year-long, 24/7, 365 way of life.
Well, I would say I understand the whole donation because around the holidays, but I don't understand, like, why people can't, you know, donate and give out to people in the middle of the year. Like, why does it have to only be around holidays, you know, Christmas, Thanksgiving? Like, what about, you know, like, during the year and stuff? What would you like to say?
like what Armin like said about the donation stuff, but we still gotta understand that, you know, people who want to donate stuff can't always do it because, you know, they have their family they gotta take care of, make them have a good Christmas and stuff. So just gotta like, think of both sides.
Right. And if you could get human beings to think, if you could get human beings to think about something during the holiday season that they're not necessarily thinking about, what would you want people to be thinking about this time of year?
It's not all about receiving, you know, and it's also not all about just like giving, 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 but, you know, just being thankful for, you know, living another day and having your family being healthy and things along those lines. It's not all about the presents or, you know, the materialistic things in life.
Yes. Just appreciate your family, people who like done stuff for you, make like the going through like into 2018 and just like living another year and seeing another Christmas in 2018, you know, appreciating the people that are already done stuff for you.
Well, we appreciate you. We appreciate that you've been on this show throughout the fall. You've been an integral part of the youth voices on WOOC. You're some of the only youth that we've had on. We've also had on some students from School 12, but we're very proud of you. So thank you.
Thank you for having us.
We also have Lauren Wilson here, another student from Troy and another WOOC intern. And we also have Trayvon Votrin, who is our youngest intern ever at the Sanctuary. We want to ask you the same questions, and then Trey is going to give us the youth community calendar. So, Lauren and Trey, what are the sacrifices that the adults in your family are facing as they're getting ready for the holidays?
Well, I feel like it's, like, longer work hours because, like, our parents have to work to get us what we want. You know, like, some of our parents struggle. Like, my mom, I know she works a lot, and then she has to come home to make sure that we get what we want, and when she comes home, it's like she just makes dinner and then she's exhausted because she's trying to make sure we have everything and that we're good. So like I feel like I would be like, that's what are the sacrifices, just like time and time basically.
And what does she put together for the holidays? What's going on over the next few weeks for you?
Well, my mom, since, like, my grandmother has passed, my mom's actually, like, she's doing Christmas, too. And, like, we celebrate Kwanzaa. So it's, like, it's 8 days plus Christmas is, like, a new adjustment for us because we usually celebrate it with our grandmother. And then my mom, does the Kwanzaa. But it's, like, we just added on another tradition. And it's, like, sort of been hard. But, like, I feel like now we're just, like, progressing from it.
And Trey, how about for you? What are some of the sacrifices that the adults in your family are facing as they're getting ready for the holidays?
My mom has to start working two jobs and, like, just to make enough to make us, like, a good meal for Christmas and to make us, like, to get us the stuff that we need. Not really, like, the stuff that we need. Like, it's really, like, the stuff that we want. Because we don't really need, like, all these toys, TVs, phones. Like, we want those things.
I don't know if this is the revelation of a precious vision, but would you tell us some of the things that you want?
I want an Xbox, but I want an Xbox One S.
I'll have to research what the One S means, but sounds good. Sounds really good. And same question that we asked Ariana and Aaron. What are some of the ways that holiday spirit could be extended throughout the year? Joseph's House in downtown Troy talks about how people think that, you know, the homeless at this time of year, they need more shelter. Really, homeless people need more provisions in the summertime. So how could we extend the spirit of generosity that comes out at this time with clothing drives, food drives, to be a 365 way of life?
I would say don't just, like, because people mostly think about, like, the biggest major holidays, like Thanksgiving and Christmas, but you can also, like, donate, like a couple dollars, like, every month, every week, every day, whatever is comfortable for you. Or you can donate, like, clothes, kind of like food and stuff to actually like help those in need, because if you put yourself in your in their shoes, you wouldn't like if like people aren't helping you.
Do you agree, Lauren?
Yeah, I actually feel like that the holiday spirit could be like it could be extended throughout the year by like people just thinking about the thought instead of like just not the value, not only the value of like gifts. Like people just buy gifts and feel like, oh, because this is worth this much, they should be grateful. Like, okay, we should be grateful for the amount of money you spent because like an expensive gift like worth a lot, you know. But like just people in general, just some people might not have that amount of money, and like kids, they draw pictures for their parents. And I know like some parents who like struggle would be, or just people in general who struggle would be grateful for their children just giving the thought, or someone like their friends or family just giving thought. And it's like, why does it always have to be like about materials?
Well, speaking of gifts, I feel like you've given the community at the sanctuary, Lauren and Trey, a huge amount of gifts this year. So thank you. I mean, you've shared with us as not only WOOC interns, but also members of Uptown Summer making the documentary Echoes from Lock One. You shared your poetry. I have visions of 2017 and Trey picking up things on the beach and doing high resolution scans for environmental research, and Lauren's writing. So I feel like your families must be very proud of those gifts that you've given to the community, to the Troy community and the wider community. So thank you.
Welcome.
You're welcome. And it was nice being here.
And we have now a community calendar of youth events from Trey.
On Saturday, December 16th, come down to Stuff a Stocking, located at the Troy Church of Christ, where kids of all ages can get free toys, crafts, candy, and so much more. This event will be located at 185 Main Ave, Wineskill, New York, 12198. Don't forget to come down to Snuffle Vision Photography Shop to watch a free movie for kids, located at 111 102nd Street, Troy, New York, 12182.
And let's not forget the ultimate family-friendly event that's happening right here at the Sanctuary on Saturday. Are you coming? Trey and Lauren, are you coming to the North Troy Holiday Justice and Peace Party on Saturday?
I'm coming.
Yeah? You should try.
Well, I have actually, like, this RPI thing, but I'm actually hoping to come afterwards because I've already promised John. Yes, I did. But, yeah.
Excellent. So tons of free food. Everyone's welcome. Free family portraits. Troy Bike Rescue bike giveaway. It's going to be a good time. Thank you.
That concludes our show for today. Once again, I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. I'm Dave Publow.
And I'm J.P. Pogorski. Remember to tune back in tomorrow and every weekday at 7 a.m., 9 a.m., and 6 p.m. to get your daily dose of local news.
To learn more about this program and how you can support the Sanctuary for Independent Media, feel free to visit our website at mediasanctuary.org.
If you'd like information on how you can participate in the production of this program or have suggestions on stories you'd like to hear about, email us at info@mediasanctuary.org.
If you're interested in being part of the radio crew here, we hold weekly meetings on Mondays and Thursdays right after the show at 7:07 p.m. You can come by the Sanctuary for Independent Media located at 3361 6th Avenue in Troy.
The next episode of the Hudson Mohawk Magazine is featuring movie interviews, reviews, and headlines.
Until next time, thanks for tuning in.
Thank you.